Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for their shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, Republican strategist Marcus Skelton, screenwriter and editor John Ridley, and NPR's own political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
How you doing?
Everything is going good. Albert Haynesworth is in shape and ready to go for the Redskins.
Why can't you just say good, man, like everybody else? Hey, yo, first time in the shop. JR, who shot you? How you living, bro?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Good, man. I'm making it do what it do. Well, let's keep it in motion. You know, the NAACP wraps its annual convention today in Kansas City. And the big news out of there, Michelle, was his resolution condemning the quote-unquote racist elements in the Tea Party movement.
Yeah, there was other news out of there. I think it is fair to say, you know, Michelle Obama spoke and so forth. But what seems to have captured the headlines is this kind of back and forth with the Tea Party leaders about what they say are racist elements in the program. And then we had on the program yesterday two Tea Party supporters who are of color debating the issue. But then the Tea Party, their point of view was that there are fringe elements as part of this movement that don't really represent the whole of it. Well, then yesterday, Tea Party Express spokesperson Mark Williams decided to fan the flames, first by saying the NAACP, quote, makes more money off of race than any slave trader ever. And then he decided to blog today, pretending to write as NAACP President Ben Jealous. I'll just give a flavor of what he said. He wrote, "How will we colored people ever get a widescreen TV in every room if non-coloreds get to keep what they earn? Totally racist. The Tea Party expects coloreds to be productive members of society." So there you go. Go ahead.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Thank you, ahead. Michelle. Helter Skelton, what's up, man? So you're the Republican strategist, right? Was the NAACP right to take a stand against the Tea Party or... is the group trying to, are they trying to become relevant again, the NAACP?
Well, I think the NAAACP has always been relevant. I mean, I've directly and indirectly benefit from stuff from the NAACP. But when it comes to making a soft resolution, I think that's laughable. We know that they always attack the racist elements in the Republican Party, but don't do it in their own party. When it comes to people like Harry Reid and Negro Dialects, you know, they come and condone that. But, you know, what they could do is that they actually agree with some of the things that the Tea Party is working with. You know, they believe in, both of them want to believe in constitutional rights. Both of them believe that deficit spending and how we're going to grow our middle class. And, you know, both of them believe that the government is over promising, over taxing, and under delivering.
So they have more in common than they disagree with.
I think so. If Newt Gingrich and Al Sharpton can get together and work on something, I think the Tea Party and the NAACP could actually agree on, like, maybe one thing. I don't think it'll be 100.
So what's up with this Mark Williams? What's up with that? I mean, is that okay with you?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not sure. I wouldn't say that. You know, but the thing is, I think that, you know, working together with it, and then, you know, as you pick out certain elements, you know, you pick out elements amongst everybody else, but you won't pick out your own elements. You know, and well, I think that's one thing I definitely disagree with at the NAACP. Because I think it's a people problem, not a Democrat or Republican problem.
It's definitely a people problem because, you know what, the Tea Party, you know, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids are more organized than the Tea Party, man.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I wouldn't say that. You will find that out in November.
Okay, man. I'm waiting with bated breath. Ken Dog.
Wow. First of all, there's so many things to touch here. And I disagree with Marcus on one thing. Harry Reid and the Negro comment. First of all, Harry Reid apologized profusely for that. Everybody accepted his apology. And also, it wasn't so much the NAACP versus the Tea Party. It's racist elements in the Tea Party. It's still a fact that members of the African-American members of Congress, when they were walking out of voting for the health care bill, they were pelted with racial taunts by people self-identifying themselves as members of the Tea Party. Emanuel Cleaver, the congressman from Missouri, was spat upon by somebody who identified himself as a Tea Party. Now, there are a lot of people in the Tea Party who say this is despicable conduct. We have tried, we've done everything we can to root out these racist, intolerant elements, but it exists, and I think the NAACP wanted to call them out on that.
JR.
Well, I, for one, actually applaud Mark Williams for having the guts to say what everyone else is thinking. When he said more money was made off of the NAACP, off of black, than slave traders. Who knew that? And that's an interesting statistic. It was not really a statistic because there are no dollar amount involved, but clearly they made a dollar more than slave traders. So thanks, Mark Williams, for pointing that out. Also, he said the absurdity of a group that calls blacks colored people, hurling the charge of racism. As a Negro, I never knew what the C stood for before. So if Mark hadn't come out and told me, I never would have known that the NAACP, when they're agitating for Brown versus Board of Education and Civil Rights Act, clearly just a bunch of self-hating Negroes that were overcompensating. Thank you, Mark Williams,
Wait,
for
John,
educating
John,
me and the rest of colored America. Thank you.
John, how do we know that that's a real number that he's throwing out there with the NAACP making more money off black people?
I think he's being sarcastic.
He said it.
And it must be true then, right?
It's obviously true. Look, I'm not sure why I'm sitting here first thing in the morning explaining. The Tea Party has done more in its illustrious 8 months for people of color than the NAACP ever will. End of discussion. Let's just table it and move on.
Okay, that's certainly one approach, right?
But Jimmy, like quoting Mark Williams is like quoting, like, there used to be an African-American congressman from Chicago named Gus Savage who would always do anti-white, anti-Semitic comments, and the white press loved it because they would always, you know, love to quote him. I mean, why go after somebody like Mark Williams when you know he's going to say something incendiary?
Go after a spokesperson who's speaking for the group? Go after the guy who's speaking for the group?
But
exactly.
What group is it? The Tea Party is a conglomeration of just angry people around the country who say they're Tea Party.
Exactly. So why go after the guy who's paid to speak for the group? I agree. I'm agreeing with you. Mm-hmm. I think it's absurd to pick on the one guy who's paid to speak for the organization.
Well,
exactly.
I think the question here is, at what point do people pick their hands up and put their hands up on something that is really a matter of culture and sort of defining the boundaries of language? I mean, because, yeah, there is the policy, and people are free to look at the policy. They're free to look at candidates who espouse the policy and say, do I like you or do I not like you? Do I agree with you? Do I not like you? But then there's this question of, like, the New York Post cartoon that some people were offended by, that some people seem to equate Barack Obama with a gorilla or Nancy. You know what I mean? So that's, to me, is the question, is where do you push back on language? When is that a good use of your time, and when is it not a good use of your time? I think that's kind of in part what we're talking about.
And you have
here
Rand Paul, a Republican candidate backed by the Tea Party in Kentucky, who was asked about whether he would support the 1964 Civil Rights Act. He said, well, I'm not sure, because of public accommodation, it's federal intrusion into government, federal intrusion into business. And that basically, that's not what the Republican Party needs to stand for.
I'm going to just ask Marcus one more question before we move on to other things, which is that, you know, as your former chair of the DC Young Republicans, which is one of the largest young Republican clubs in the country, you're African American, you have said, and you believe in limited government, you think that's something to uphold.
Right.
On the other hand, you don't like some of this language either. So what do you think is the right approach to something like this?
I think it's an approach of when it happens in either party, you got to stand up for it. You know, I don't see, and I always joke about it every week, you don't see the NAACP coming to help out Michael Steele in the RNC right now. We can be silent on that, or it doesn't matter. But the most important thing is, if we see it in our party, we do. Matter of fact, Chairman Steele did stand up to Rand Paul when he made his comments about the about civil rights.
Yeah, but he's also been criticized for doing it. When he's criticized Rush Limbaugh for comments that he thought were racist, people criticized him for that, and he apologized for that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's not. The thing is not about overall Michael Steele. The thing is about pointing out when race is a problem in either party. You know, it always seems when Democrats come out, they find every black person in the country to say, "Well, he's the old good man." You know, Harry Reid was a prime example that ended up with NAACP.
But people do have a difference of opinion about whether what he was saying had some basis in fact or not.
It depends. I see myself as a 6'2", dark-skinned American with a hint of Negro dialect. I was quite offended by what Harry Reid said.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
And then when you
were
see.
Were you really?
Yeah. And when you see the NAACP.
You were Republican offended or Marcus offended?
Oh, no, Marcus offended.
Okay.
You know, but seeing the NAACP, you know, vouch for Harry Reid, I thought that was very disappointing, and kind of see, okay, well, I know that's what happens. You know, they pick and choose their battles.
I don't want to debate the whole Harry Reid thing. I do want to just point out that there is data to show that, in fact, he did have a basis in fact for what he said, is that people do make these colorist gradations, whether we like it or not like it. So he might have actually been speaking from a sociological perspective, even though a lot of people – he did apologize. So I take your point. I'm just throwing out other data because it exists.
True.
And so often when we come to race, we don't actually deal with facts, and there is actually some data on that point. Let me just jump in to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Ken Rudin, Marcus Skelton, and screenwriter John Ridley. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, fellas. Last week, we spent a lot of time pouring salt in my wounds about NBA superstar LeBron James leaving us here in Cleveland to play in Miami next season. Now, we even touched on Cavalier owner David Gilbert's incendiary letter to Cavs fans calling LeBron, quote, cowardly and disloyal. But then Jesse Jackson jumps into the fray and uses, you know, the slave owner word, Michelle.
I think it's Dan Gilbert. And do you want to play? Well, do you want to hear what he said? Do you want to hear what
absolutely.
He had to say? Okay, here's it. This is Reverend Jackson. This is from a video posted on BET.com. Here it
no
is.
No owner should express this kind of contempt toward players. And in effect, Gilbert was saying, if I'm on your contract, you're my guy. If I'm on your contract, I will seek to destroy you, and that must stop. The mentality of a runaway slave, if I own you, I protect you. If I don't own you, I'll get you some kind of way. That kind of anger and bitterness has no place in civil behavior, not in organized sport.
Well, David Stern evidently agreed because he fined Dan Gilbert $100,000 for those comments. So there you go, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. You know, me personally, I think the whole LeBron James thing, I think it represents kind of a tilt and balance of power. You know, it's rare that players can control their own destinies. You know, and I think Gilbert felt as if James didn't know his role. You know, but his tone was very paternal. And I knew eventually somebody was going to tap into that. I didn't know it was going to be Jesse Jackson. Ken Dog.
Well, you know, so first of all, I mean, Gilbert stands to lose hundreds of millions of dollars by the loss of LeBron James. He had a lot of money invested in the team, a lot of money invested in casinos outside of Cleveland. I mean, he's going to take it in the pocket. The bringing up of race is troubling, and I understand exactly what Jesse Jackson is saying, but in many ways, even white players in the old days with baseball, when you couldn't leave from team to team, it was like a slave ownership of players, but it was white players too. I think that's just a system the way it is in basketball, the way it used to be in baseball, but a black-white issue, I thought Jackson was over the top, but not surprising.
All right, Ken, well, you say that, but have we ever known an owner to write a letter like that to a white player that's left?
No. I mean, I've seen
Al Davis.
Al Davis.
Al Davis.
He was crazy too. Okay. Yeah, it just doesn't seem like race.
Yeah, but, he was crazy too, right?
But it was. Look, Steinbrenner would berate torture his own players, and most of whom were white. But again, I think Gilbert's actions were over the top, but something that you expect from a 14-year-old fan, not from the owner of a professional basketball team.
Al Davis, being the Oakland Raiders owner. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, John.
Al Davis, Oakland Raider, who's wrote a letter last year to one of his coaches who he got rid of. I two things. One, just a little pet peeve. LeBron doesn't control. Nobody controls their own destiny. That's why it's destiny. It's out there. That's the first thing. That's just me. The other thing is, who cares what Jesse Jackson says anymore? I mean, seriously. This is the guy who said don't use the N-word anymore, and then uses it about Obama, talking about castrating the president of the United States of America, the whole Duke lacrosse thing, which was a horrible situation all the way around. Honestly, it's to throw slavery around like this. You can say that Gilbert is a kid. You can say that LeBron didn't handle the situation well, whatever. But to make that comparison to slavery, this is, to me, is as bad as what the Tea Party is saying and belittling people of color. It's ridiculous and it's uncalled for.
I agree completely with John. It's when people talk about somebody being like Hitler, to compare, you know, Barack Obama or anybody to Adolf Hitler, who murdered millions of people, just diminishes the memory of those who perished.
Especially to black kids, say this is what slavery is.
Exactly.
You can go wherever you want,
okay,
make tens of millions of dollars. You could retire if you wanted to. Slaves couldn't retire. Sorry. Couldn't do it.
Let's move on and talk about Mel Gibson. He's gotten Hollywood in a tizzy because of a series of recorded phone conversations featuring harsh, I mean really harsh, language against his wife, even threatening to kill her, Michelle.
I'm not sure they're married. But no.
Yeah, I think that's his girlfriend.
He's his girlfriend, but she is the mother of his youngest
child. He left his wife.
And he left his wife for her. And,
right.
You know, it's a controversy. Should we play this or should we not play it? But for give you just a little sense of it, of what the flavor of these conversations were. I'll just play a little bit. It's from Radar. These were posted on Radar Online. We have to say that Gibson's lawyers don't deny that it was him, but they do say these were edited conversations. So there you go. So here it is.
I don't work around in tight clothes. I stay at home for most of the time.
You go out in public and it's a embarrassment to me. You look like a John Heap. And if you get raped by a pack of it'll be your fault. All right? Because you provoked it. You are provocatively dressed all the time with your fake boobs. You feel you have to show off in tight outfits and tight pants instead of you see your from behind. And that green thing today was enough. That's provocative.
That's enough. Thank you. I think we've heard enough. I don't know. I'm curious, John Ridley. I'm curious on your perspective on this. And, you know, Jay Leno was talking about it. It's obviously become part of the. It's hard for me to. It's hard. I think it's hard for a lot of us to listen to. The question is, does he have a career after this?
Well, clearly, this is the kind of thing that destroyed Charlie Sheen's career. So I think that this is really it. For Mel Gibson. I mean, this is it. Elliot Spitzer never bounced back. We'll never see that guy again after behavior like
right.
this. So,
I
mean, just Roman Polanski, done. So, clear. Let me say that in Hollywood, the only thing you can do that'll destroy your career is go after the NRA. That's it. So, at this point, I mean, honestly, he's going to be on Oprah. He's going to cry. He's going to have a small pivotal role in a movie where he performs well and then moves on. I think in Hollywood, short of eating human flesh... and even at that, maybe you get on a cooking show. But this Mel has got a few years left, I think, in his bag.
Yeah, and
Jimmy,
not just
what
that,
do you think?
Yeah, not just that. I mean, he's not acting in films that much anymore. He's really
directing,
kind of
producing.
With,
you're right.
With,
yeah.
Well, yeah, he's doing this thing with Icon Productions.
Yeah,
so I mean, he'll be okay.
That, he's got that Jesus movie money right now. Yeah. So I honestly, when you get Jesus movie money, you can go out and you can talk like that. If I had Jesus movie money, the things that would be coming out of my mouth right now would probably sink NPR forever.
Oh, dear. Well, let's not do that. Let's not do that. John Ridley is a screenwriter and a graphic novelist. He's the editor of ThatMinorityThing.com. He's a contributor to NPR's Morning Edition. He was with us from NPR West. Also with us, Jimmy Israel, a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Marcus Skelton is a Republican strategist. He's also grants advisor for the Higher Education Association. And Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor, our political junkie. They were both here with us in Washington, D.C. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Later.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.